Rich, it's David Cassidy.
Hello, David. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How about yourself, buddy? How you doing?
I'm hanging in there. So I'm in the process of working out a offer to bring you back to like a big theater in New Jersey, like in the fall, like I'm like 1,500 seats. So
fantastic, man! I'd love to do that. Thank you. I'm glad you love the show.
Thanks. So what I'll do
is so much for your continued support, Rich. Really, really, I can't even tell you how much I appreciate it. And
I love the show, and we'll talk about that when we like kick in the interview and stuff. It's funny because I always have these bands that come on my shows, and they always ask me, you know, part of the deal is they have to do a cover song. One of the bands is this all-girl punk band, and I made them cover I Woke Up in Love This Morning. And they nailed it. Unbelievable.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
I'll send it to them.
You know, a lot of people are not aware that I spent, from the time I was about 4 or 5, in New Jersey with my mom and my grandparents, because I was born in Manhattan and stayed there until I was, 4 or 5, and went to grammar school in West Orange. And I could remember when I was, 6, 7, 8 years old, and my grandmother used to take the bus and take me with her down to Newark. And it's great that they have done so much to refurbish downtown and downtowns all over the United States as a result of the malls being built. But it's a fantastic thing that the downtowns, I was in Cleveland a couple of weeks ago, and it's a fantastic city now. And I can't wait for the opportunity to acknowledge the people. Some of my that I went to grammar school with are going to be there. I've already gotten a whole bunch of acknowledgments about me coming back, I don't know, maybe 10 miles from where I spent from 4 till 11 when I moved out to L.A. in New Jersey. So I kind of feel like it's coming home. And when I was doing the Parks Family, I used to do weekends. While shooting the show during the week and recording at night, I used to do an afternoon show and an evening show. So this will be sort of like walking down memory lane for me, and I'm excited to come back, and I've heard the facilities do that. So obviously I have a lot of ties to New Jersey, and always feel like it's a homecoming. It's such a trip for me, but I love the songs and hits, and also taking people on a musical journey of my entire life. As many people know, my dad was a fantastic singer and musician, as was my mother, my grandmother, everybody. On my mom's side, always played an instrument and were singers. And so I guess I come by it naturally in that regard.
We're here with David Cassidy on Anything, Anything, and anybody who listens to the show knows how much I gushed after seeing David. He played a small theater in New Jersey, the Newton Theater. How blown away by the show. And I knew that, of course, there was going to be, you know, Partridge Family stuff. And it's just an amazing, amazing show. And how great it sounded, especially those Partridge Family songs.
And I love them, by the way. No, I love them. They were great songs and great hits. And I do stuff off the albums that, you know, were all triple platinum. So I'm blessed in that regard, and I think fans really appreciate that I take them on this musical journey through my life, the influences. You know, I picked up my first electric guitar the day after. It was a Monday after seeing the Beatles come over in 63, and I begged my mom, and they took me to the music store, and I bought an electric guitar, and started learning Beatles songs and learning to play, and I was 13 years old, and it was such an influence. And getting to know all of them a little bit, and getting to know John and Yoko as well, quite well, and hanging out and getting to play with him. And I got a chance to jam and play with McCartney years ago, and it was really fun for me because it's like you get an opportunity to do what you fantasized about when you were a young man or a young boy. And I think a lot of it with music, it takes us to the place when you hear the song, it takes us to where you were the first time, or it had a significant impact, you know, whether you were me or just walking home from school or whatever it was. It takes you back, and that's the blessing of music to me.
Just an amazing, amazing show. I mean, besides the Partridge Family songs, and then you did like a B.B. King cover, and then like a Gershwin cover. Just blown me away. You were in and out of so many different things. Of course, a Beatles cover, then a Monkees cover, a Neil Diamond cover, back to your stuff. Just amazing breadth of music and what you put together with that show.
You know, before I started recording, I was playing guitar in really bad garage bands, but the influences of the writers, the songwriters themselves, and the musicians, and the individuality of the talent as a teenager growing up in the 60s was really, it had such an enormous impact on me. But my dad, you know, and my mom were both theatrical and on Broadway. My earliest recollection is my dad and I, me sitting in the passenger seat, and I don't know how old I was, maybe four, three, something like that, and we were heading into New York. I think I had moved to New Jersey at that time. My dad came and picked me up, and he was singing Night and Day by Cole Porter, and we sang it together. He taught it to me, and I've never forgotten it. And at some point, I'm going to start recording songs my father taught me.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. And I've had the, you know, good fortune of working with some of the great songwriters and musicians of all time in the studio and being able to tour around the world and meet people that influenced me. B.B. King being one, John and Paul, as I mentioned. I got to work and write with Brian Wilson and love Carl. Anyway, I've been so blessed to have that kind of influence and that kind of an opportunity to work with people like that. I want people to see me and what I'm doing now as a musician. People don't think that I was a blues guitar player in high school. And, you know, I evolved, saw Hendrix four times. I saw Cream. I think it was one of their last two concerts at the Santa Monica Civic when I moved to L.A. And I think one of them was the infamous Crossroads. A lot of people aren't aware of that. I was a big blues fan and listened to, you know, B.B. King was for all of us who play guitar and love blues. He was the man. And he had an enormous impact on all the great guitar players that were in Britain. You know, be obviously Eric Clapton, Jeff Beck, Peter Green, who was in the original Fleetwood Mac. All of the great British guitar players that are still thought of today as being the guys would all tell you that B.B. King, Albert King, Robert Johnson. And I used to do Crossroads, actually, but it's so intimidating to do it because that song and that particular version that Eric and Green did is so ingrained in everybody's brain. It's kind of like you can't really repeat it, so don't do it. You'll never bring what they had in that magical recording. But I think being at the Santa Monica Civic where they recorded their last two shows, I think one of the shows, it might have been the one I was at, was the infamous Crossroads, where many people think it's the greatest live solo ever done. And it's so great to have had the opportunity to be alive and to have absorbed like a sponge that I did. And I'm really looking forward to Supreme doing some things that they probably don't expect me to do.
And as much as I was blown away by when you did Sweet Little Angel by B.B. King, the song that really, really blew me away in your set that if you would have given me a million guesses, I would have never gotten it, was when you did Common Thief from the Harder They Fall album. How does that end up in the set. Just amazing. Like, deep cut from, like, a deep album.
I do music, and I mean this about my Partridge Family songs and hits and my own solo hits back from the 70s, et cetera. I think when I made the transition, they gave me creative freedom, which, of course, they don't do anymore.
I did
a satirical sort of the higher they climb, the harder they fall was about this great rock and roll star who hits the skids. And it was a part of my humor, self-effacing, I guess. People have commented on it. It was around the world. I think the album itself sold over 4 million. And it was never played on the radio here, but it's one of my favorite songs. And writing an album that was a conceptual album was very difficult because I wanted people to see who I really was as opposed to the character that I was playing. And the music that was designed for the character and for the show, which were great songs. I mean, some of the greatest musicians and greatest songwriters of all time I got to work with. And I was, a neophyte. And I learned so much and I'm so grateful for it. I really am. And I want people to know more about myself, who I am, and the journey that I've taken, and how much I appreciate it.
And was it intimidating at the time when you were on RCA? You had just come out of like your deal with Bell and the Teen Idol stuff, and you're on RCA at the point where Elvis is kind of fading, but then Bowie is kind of really popping, and those are the two big artists on RCA. At that point, how did you feel you fit in with that in terms of how they were promoting your records? Because you always had Elvis, which was a big machine, and Bowie was basically kicking on fire at that point. Young Americans was coming out. How did that affect the promotion of it for you?
Probably not for me, but they wanted me to rekindle a lot of where I was in a very different respect. They didn't want me to be me, where my influences and the people that I grew up and learned and played with and had an opportunity to, at that point, be myself, the creative freedom they gave me. But they didn't want that. They wanted me to do what, as a corporation, as a business, I totally understand it. But as an artist, I was like, this is what I want to do. And, they weren't that successful, but the album went gold. And when an album goes gold, at least you can say, well, it was pretty successful. You know, around the world, it was an enormous success. And I got lost in trying to re-identify myself, and I thought the best thing for me to do was to leave it and then come back to it and show people, after the incredible success and fame that I was blessed with was a curse in terms of trying to do creative, artistically, who I was and what my music was. And it's great now, having toured around for the last 15 years all over the world. I'm the most incredible band, and they're like my second family.
Let's talk about this band. Tell me about this band. They were spectacular.
Well, they're individually, their resumes are phenomenal. I want to play with the best players in the world, but I want to play with people who love it and who are into it and are not reading charts. They don't stand up there with music stands, and they know it. They love it. We all travel together, and we have an incredible bond. And it comes over time. Years of playing together, and, they're all prodigies. So I'm so fortunate to be able to play with such talent and the love they have for what we do together. They love playing with each other and with me, and I can't express it any more than it's for me, as an actor, you get on stage when you have something great to do. You know, as you know, I've been on Broadway 3 times, and when you're in the theater, you're working in an ensemble, and everybody, your integrity as an artist is about giving everything you have every single night. And as a recording artist and then a performing artist, that band is like working with actors, where it has to be kicked back. They're not just sitting there going, let's get this thing over. They're into every single thing we do. And I'm looking forward to doing it, coming home, and it'll be great. I look forward to seeing some of the people that I grew up in grammar school with, too.
You were the second guy or second person to record I Write the Songs, right? Mm-hmm. Captain Tennille had done it first. I thought Captain Tennille was on, did theirs come out first? Maybe theirs got released first. I think they came out. Were you the first one? And then Captain Tennille, right? And then Barry Manilow.
Yes, that's correct.
So were you, like when Barry Manilow had an insanely huge hit with it, did you sit there and say, well, wait a second, mine's better. How come I didn't get the huge hit?
Well, again, I was on RCA at the time, and they said after it was top 5 in the UK, Germany, all over Europe, and I don't know how many countries it went to number one. It was top 5 in probably 15 different countries. The American RCA United States, USA, said, we don't think it's a hit here. Well, yeah. I don't know whatever evidence you need. And Barry and his manager, who I know and have known for years, covered it and did a more pop version. I recorded the song with Bruce Johnson when we were co-producing that album. And Bruce wrote it, who's in the Beach Boys.
Of course, yes. Yeah, but it's funny, but that song made a success, which is the irony. Like, you wonder if they would have released it here as a single for you, and it got all those accolades, and Barry never did it. Because that was the song that actually transformed Barry. It's like weird how like things happen in life, right?
It did, yeah.
And when you put together the set list, the one thing that it's funny, because after the show, me and my, you know, we went out to dinner afterwards, me and my friends, and we were talking about the show, and my friend's like, wow, was there anything he didn't do that you thought he would do? I'm like, well, he did Common Thief, and I would have never guessed that. But I was like, wow, he didn't do Lying to Myself, which was kind of like,
sometimes
you're late.
I do.
Sometimes you mix it in, right? Which is great. I know, you know, I really appreciate your time on the phone on a afternoon here where you probably got some cool things planned. So I want to thank you for spending this much time and, you know, allowing me to ramble with you and get to know you a little better. And
I ramble.
I ramble. We both ramble. It's going to sound great.
I do all the time. I'm on a terrible short-term soundbite artist.
Well,
you know, everybody wants like 6 seconds. No, I'm really no good at it.
Oh, you're
not really not.
You're great at talking about your art, your music, and I am excited for all the great things that are happening for you. Big event with you that I'm going to host, and we're going to make it a monster show at a theater somewhere in New Jersey, and we're working on that. And hopefully,
maybe in the fall or.
That's what we're thinking. We're thinking like October, November. We got some dates. We're going to send them to you.
Yeah,
my people are going to reach out to your people, and then hopefully. We can coordinate this and make this work.
My people, your people have lunch.
Exactly, and then we'll do a really formal sit down interview where we'll hang out. We'll bring you in the studio, maybe even cut a couple tracks. It'll be great. But no, thank you so much for everything. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for your continued support, Rich. You're really, really. I can't even tell you how much I appreciate it.